B. Mitch Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Really excited to get to the BetQL guest line and bring in Mr. Mike Florio. Pro Football Talk, NBC Sports. You see him every week on Sunday Night Football, Football Night in America. Mike, what's going on, man? Thanks for making time for us.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Doing well, man.
Dude, so there's a lot I want to talk to you about, but one thing jumped out to me that I think you just tweeted about. I watch the Manning cast. I really enjoy the Manning cast. But the ratings numbers are a lot lower than I would expect. I just read your article.
Yeah, they had been flirting with dipping under a million viewers for the past several episodes. And I was very curious to see how week one would do this year with the addition of Bill Belichick. Now, the caveat is DirecTV and Disney are still caught in a carriage fight, and that takes 11 million viewers out of the mix. But when they announced the final audience numbers for the week one game between the Jets and the 49ers, 20.5 million viewers. There was no reference at all made to the Manning cast, and that's the first time that's ever happened. They've always had the Manning cast numbers in there. So I asked ESPN, never heard back, and now we know why. 872,000. So it plummeted below a million, even with Belichick. And you really do have to wonder what it adds. And I know it's not popular to say that because Peyton's very powerful and he's got rabbit ears and everybody wants to be on his good side. But let's be realistic. Whatever they're paying, what is it really adding? Is anybody tuning in and watching the game just to watch the Manning cast? And but for the presence of the Manning cast, they wouldn't watch the game at all. I just think they're sucking numbers away from their main broadcast. And as the main broadcast gets better and better with Troy Aikman and Joe Buck, there's less and less reason to watch an alternate broadcast that, if anything, distracts you from enjoying the game. That's why I don't watch. I watch it the next day sometimes as like a podcast because I want to just watch the game, and I think most people feel that way. Just show me the game. I don't need to hear commentary and interviews with comedians and actors that distract me from paying attention to the actual game.
But isn't that's the part of the problem where you have a certain amount of people that's watching, and you keep adding something else for somebody to watch. It's going to start pulling people different ways, and you won't have that same numbers all the time.
No, you're right. And I think it's better to just embrace the game for what it is. Pro football is one of the few things that can draw millions of people together at the same time. Why in the world would you want to start looking for ways to push it off of your main platform onto others with things that really aren't going to get people to watch who otherwise wouldn't watch? And I think networks struggle with that, but here's the reality. For a lot of these network executives, having the Manning cast is like having vanity plates on your car. People think they're cool. Ultimately, they don't mean a damn thing. They don't add to the bottom line at all. They siphon away money from what otherwise would be available for other budgetary items, because whatever they're paying, I think we can agree on whatever they're paying the Mannings for this, and it's surely not an insubstantial number. It's a waste of money, because it's not moving the needle. And if anything, the needle's moving in the wrong direction.
Mike, it's funny. I heard something many years ago that one of the reasons some of the former athletes that get into media get paid so much money is because board members and media executives think it's really cool to be able to text those guys.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Look, Delta gave Tom Brady an actual job. Like, not just do ads for us. Like, he does pep talk conference calls with employees. They don't know a damn thing about planes. Makes me less likely to fly Delta, frankly, if you're allocating your resources that way. But it basically becomes the marketing budget is kind of like a slush fund so you can go be cool and be friends with guys who otherwise wouldn't talk to you. I mean, I really do think there's something to be said for that. And you can go sidle up to your heroes and hang out with these guys and feel cool for a day or two or for as long as that relationship continues.
Talking with Mike Florio here from Pro Football Talk. I know you got the new book out. I knew about Father of Mine. That was the one you put out maybe 2 years ago, roughly based on kind of your upbringing. And tell me about Son of Mine.
Yeah, Father of Mine, actually, what was it? Time is just like a friggin' blur, but April of 23, I think, is when Father of Mine came out. It did well enough that I wrote the sequel. And frankly, I started the sequel before Father of Mine even came out because I was curious as to where the story would go from where Father of Mine ended. And it picks up exactly where Father of Mine left off. It stands alone. You don't have to read Father of Mine to enjoy Son of Mine. But from page one, it spoils the surprise ending to Father of Mine. So be aware of that. Don't read these backward. Read the first one and then the second one, because once you read the second one, there isn't the same impetus to read the first one. But it all is based, and I don't want to say based, it's inspired by actual events from the early 1970s in Wheeling, West Virginia, a town, like many small towns at the time, overrun by the mob. It was pre-RICO. The prosecutors realized that Federal Racketeering Act could be used to take down the mob, and it ultimately did. But back in the early 70s, there was a lot of stuff that was going on. It was all out in the open. My dad was a bookie that was attached to the mob in Wheeling at the time, and nobody thought it was any big deal. I remember he'd have a box of envelopes during football season that would go out to all the doctors and lawyers and judges and politicians with the sheet that had the betting lines for the next weekend, because that's how the world was then. We actually had to put stuff like that in the mail to people, and then they'd call in with their wagers. So that's how it went, and nobody said boo about it, and it was just a weird kind of time, and I was too young to realize how weird it was, but that's provided the template for what has been two books. And I'm getting real curious about what happens to the characters after the end of the second book, so that probably means at some point there'll be a third one.
Dude, I don't know how you have time for all that.
Yeah, all the stuff you're doing.
It's very impressive.
And here's the reality, too, because people ask me that question. I'm not just generating these things with AI. I have been doing PFT since November 1 of 2001, and I work fast. I write fast. I think fast. You may not agree with my thoughts, but they all come out quickly. So when I get a couple of hours, like tonight I'm going to go down to my barn maybe from 9 to 11, I can crank out 2,500 to 3,000 words in that 2 hours that I can just kind of find a squirrel away. And that's kind of become my hobby, the way that PFT was once my hobby. But it's all about thinking fast, working fast. I never have writer's block because I don't have time to have writer's block. I just have to go when I get that opportunity to do it.
Think about the gist of that book. You say you have to mail stuff out to get the wages. Now you just push the button.
That's right. Right on your phone.
Different world, man. It's funny. You say that about PFT and the think fast, write it fast, shorter form. I mean, it completely changed written content in sports. I mean, PFT completely changed how written content was consumed. And then, I mean, like, you know, I don't write as much as I used to, but like that's the model that everybody that was covering the NFL used outside of maybe a few kind of legacy newspapers. You changed the world, Mike, which is pretty damn cool.
Well, I didn't set out to do it. Look, what I did in 2001 was I said, hey, what is the media outlet that covers the NFL that I would visit? What would be the ideal thing that would get my time and attention? So I just made that. And I think that's a good principle for anybody that gets into any service type of a business. Think of yourself as the customer. What would you want as the customer? And just give people that. As long as your views aren't completely skewed and warped as to what the average person would think, that's a pretty good strategy for any business to make it work. Just give people the thing that you would buy, or in the case of PFT, that you would take your time and freely consume.
Mike, when you look at the first week of football, what did you take away from it? Is it the, I mean, we didn't have a lot of passing yards and things of that nature like we normally would see. Is that something we've got to look forward to, or that was just a one-timer?
I think it's just a one-time thing. It's one slice of an 18-piece pie. And, you know, the big caveat, and this applies if you've won or if you've lost, you don't know how bad the team is you've beaten, and you don't know how good the team is that's beaten you. You know, Commanders fans, thinking, oh, here we go again. Hey, there's a chance the Buccaneers are a powerhouse this year. There's a chance they're going to do that to everybody. They had a final eight teams last year that had a chance to force overtime against the Lions. They failed to call timeouts when the Lions were engaging in massive clock mismanagement, and they kept all their guys, and Baker Mayfield's going to be even better than he was last year. So that week one game, you flush it, because that may be one of the toughest teams we see all year long. So you just have to get past it and take advantage of the fact that one of the worst teams in the league is coming to town this week with the New York Giants, and you get to 1-1. But one of the things, and Brian, I'm sure you can speak to this, Chris Sims always tells me about the mood in the locker room. 0-1, get a little tighter, 0-2, get a little tighter, 0-3, oh no, and you get to 0-4 and you start feeling like it's over. So it's important to get that first win, and
there you go.
I can't imagine the Commanders not getting it this weekend.
Man, I tend to agree with you, but the Giants just always seem to play them so tough. specific to Jaden Daniels, Mike, a lot has been made of him getting 16 carries in the first game. The majority of those were him scrambling on pass plays. What'd you think of Jaden? What do you think of the run total?
Well, it looked like there were some designed runs in garbage time that I think are a huge mistake, because the simple and basic reality for any quarterback that chooses to run, you got to minimize the number of times the guy gets hit. And every time you get hit, every additional blow you take to your body is the one that could injure you, whether it's, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo on the sideline at Arrowhead Stadium in 2018, week three, he drops his shoulder to deliver a blow and tears his ACL. RG3, when he left Washington, went to Cleveland, dropped his shoulder week one against the Eagles and ended up being injured and missing a lot of time. We saw what happened to him in 2012, and I think it was originally the hit from Haloti Ngata of the Ravens that tore the ACL,
sure,
and he tried to play with it. You know, you just have to minimize contact. And why in the world are you letting this guy run when that game is clearly out of hand? That's what stunned me, because this is the most important asset in your organization right now. And, yes, you're going to use him and you're going to let him run, but you don't want to be stupid about it, and you don't want to run him in situations where it's not going to contribute to a victory.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. The stuff I've been talking about for a while now that I've seen them install during August is kind of the interior QB runs that Philly uses a lot. That kind of stuff has me nervous. I do think, though, looking at this Giants game this week, the Bucs blitz like crazy. The Giants don't, and I think that will almost lower the run total anyway. You mentioned that the Bucs just might be really good. I feel like we've all kind of ignored that possibility. Mm-hmm. They brought everybody back from a team that won a playoff game and had a feisty performance in the divisional round. How bad do you think Washington's defense was last week? Or is it that Tampa's got some horses?
It may just be Tampa's got some horses. I mean, they didn't just win a playoff game. They embarrassed the Eagles. I know the Eagles were in a free fall then, but that was kind of like, hey, this is their get-right opportunity. People thought they were going to go to Tampa Bay and win that game, and it was never even a contest. So I think the Buccaneers are very stout on both sides of the ball. And one last thing about Daniels that I meant to mention earlier. He really does look the part, and I think that's all you're really looking for in the early stages of a guy's career. When we were at the scouting combine and we were interviewing SEC defensive players, and we would try to ask every one of them, who's the toughest opponent you ever faced? They would not hesitate. Jaden Daniels. I mean, he's there and then he's gone. And we saw that play out with some of those scrambles on Sunday. He's there, and when he turns it on, he just disappears. And that separation, that acceleration that he possessed at the college level has translated directly to the NFL level. And I think that's the most encouraging thing. It's all the more reason to keep him healthy.
For sure. Let's go elsewhere in the NFL. Who surprised you the most in week one?
Well, boy, that's a good question. And people usually say that's a good question when they're trying to buy time and think of a good answer. I mean, I was surprised the Cowboys won as easily as they did in Cleveland. And I think Cleveland is really in kind of a weird season where they've got the roster to be good, but they need their quarterback to finally make a return on the huge investment the Browns made, both in terms of cash and in terms of three first-round picks and three other draft picks. You think about how good the Browns could be if they had just kept all those picks and kept all that money. And, you know, is the confidence really there for Deshaun Watson? Where are the Browns really going? I was surprised the Cowboys, with the CeeDee Lamb holdout, the Dak Prescott distraction, the question of whether or not they really made their team any better than it was last year. For them to go in and win as easily as they did was a surprise, but maybe as it plays out, it won't be a surprise. Maybe it was just a sign of things to come for the Browns, who possibly will struggle a year after they made it to the playoffs.
Did you expect the Jets to perform as they did?
Well, I didn't expect the defense to get manhandled, the front seven to get pushed all over the place. And, you know, last year, the defense is what kept them from completely and totally having a 2-15 meltdown. So it was easy to feel good about the Jets going into 2024. Because, yeah, all right, defense, strength of the team, Aaron Rodgers healthy, offense doesn't have to be much better, and all of a sudden this team's a contender. The offense never really got a chance to get going. They had one drive early where they scored a touchdown. It's like, hey, you know what, maybe they can win this game. Then they fell behind. They had the drive where Aaron Rodgers used the old Green Bay, guy jumps offside, free play, touchdown. But it just never felt like they had a chance to win. And kudos to the 49ers for everything they've gone through with the Brandon Ayuk hold in, the Trent Williams hold out, the Christian McCaffrey calf and Achilles injury, and I think they knew damn well he wasn't going to play on Monday night, and they got Jordan Mason ready, and nobody knew otherwise until it was time for him to go. They did a pretty good job of coming out and looking like the team that made it to the Super Bowl last year.
They really did. And how about, I mean, we almost aren't talking about them because they probably because they played the Thursday night, but how about the Chiefs being able to add the speed of Xavier Worthy, dude, and like just what that team looks like again.
Oh, and it's Hollywood Brown when he's healthy enough to return. Rashee Rice last year, one of the reasons they stood behind him despite the off-field issues from this past year, he came in and mastered the offense faster than Tyreek Hill did. He had it figured out last year, had nearly 1,000 receiving yards, took it to another level in the postseason. So between Rice and Worthy and Hollywood Brown, all of a sudden, this is a Chiefs team. You know, with Tyreek Hill, it was a lot of Patrick Mahomes holding the ball maybe longer than he should have, running around, waiting for Tyreek Hill to finally get open and throwing that big ball down the field. I think we're going to see from the Chiefs this year a lot of just situations like around midfield, play action, throw it deep.
There you go.
A little pitch back to the quarterback, flea flicker, throw it deep. There's going to be that spot between the 40 and the other 45 where I think we're going to see a lot of deep shots because they have a lot of guys that can run down the field. And then when you start covering those guys, you got Travis Kelce and Juju Smith-Schuster underneath who are going to be either wide open or fighting at best single coverage.
Yeah.
And your backup Pacheco goes crazy.
Right.
And Pacheco's the hardest runner in the NFL. I mean, what you get out of his way, and it's amazing, on any other team that didn't have Patrick Mahomes, this is a guy that could carry the ball 25 to 30 times a game and just decimate you. And yeah, that's their running attack. I know anything can happen, but, man, it's been the first time in 20 years there's a team in position to win three in a row. They're keenly aware of it, and they've got the talent on both sides of the ball to pull it off.
Wow.
Hey, last one, Mike. You think the Eagles obviously had that big win. You think Sirianni can hold that thing together? Whatever the hell happened last season, it's a new year.
I really have questions about it, and I don't know what stock to put in the Friday night game because the field was so bad. It was an embarrassment. And, you know, the NFL was lucky because that Friday night game, you didn't have the usual menu of sports talk the next day, the TV shows the next day. It was college football and then bright, shiny objects in 13 games on Sunday. That horrible field didn't get the attention it should have because really it was gone as fast as it arrived. So that might have been a fluke. They could have lost that game. I still don't know exactly why things went so wrong last year in Philly, but I just wonder at some level, are there relationships that are broken beyond repair? Do the players listen to the coach? Do the players listen to the quarterback? Is the quarterback still the guy he was before he got paid? And even if they're good early in the season, it's going to become pronounced when we get to November and December because that's when they fell apart last year.
Yeah, totally.
Mike, thank you so much.
Appreciate
everybody,
you, Mike.
Make sure you check out Son of Mine. It's available on Amazon. You can get it on your Kindle for $5, man.
$4.99. There is nothing you can buy for $4.99. Nothing. Except that.
It really isn't. You can't even get a cup of coffee for $5.
yep.
Mike, thanks, dude. See him everywhere.
Appreciate it, bro.
Peacock, everywhere. Thanks, Mike. That is Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. I feel like I may be on an island. I don't think Sirianni will hold all that together. There's just a lot of moving parts. Speaking of moving parts, Danny Dimes coming to town on Sunday.
Yes, he is.
And he's bad. We know that. But he's damn good against these guys.
It's been that way.
What did Minnesota think of Danny Dimes? They just beat him all the way up. We'll find out next.